This edition of Culture with Robert Bounds was first broadcast on the 5th of October 2015 on Monocle 24.
Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bound. Today we're asking, what does work sound like? It might seem like an odd one, but your everyday ambiance is one of those things that you don't think about too much but has quite an effect on your well-being and your productivity. But it's not just the natural sounds that occur around you in the day-to-day. What noises do you choose to surround yourself with? When the deadline's looming, do you stick on a bit of Mozart? Perhaps you work somewhere where hearing stories all day is a big part of what you do. Say if you're a therapist or even a bartender. Maybe the only sounds you like to hear are your own thoughts, and so you sit yourself down in silence. We'll be visiting an opera set builder in Victoria, a brewery on the shores of Beirut, a British pub, and a curator's office in Lisbon to find out what's on loop at their workplaces. Plus, we'll speak to a couple of experts on how we listen, how it affects our working day, and what we decide to filter out.
People have learned over a long period of time that when the birds are singing, things are okay, generally quite safe. If something bad is about to happen, the birds suddenly stop singing. That's a very spooky moment.
So settle in as we go on a sonic adventure on this week's edition of Culture with Robert Bound, where we're asking, what does work sound like? This is what a typical day at the Monocle office sounds like.
Thanks,
guys. Faye, so we'll bring you in at like 10:20, right?
Perfect, yes.
This is Monocle 24.
It's time
recording
time.
Yes. It's 1900 in Brisbane, midday in Bucharest, 10 a.m. here in London.
Ah, the drills, the price you pay for an office in a desirable area. Well, this week my office setting has changed slightly as I'm delivering this programme all the way from Bogota and Medellin. Aren't I lucky? On today's show, we're going all around the world to meet people from all walks of life to find out what their day sounds like. But to give a bit of context to all this noise, we're going to meet Francis Soper, president of Open Book Learning in America. Much of his work is about communication, and the way we absorb sounds plays a large factor in this. He speaks to producer Holly about active and selective listening and what the ideal working environment should sound like, if there is such a thing.
We look at how our auditory processing systems understand information. So we have our hearing, which is the information hitting our ears, and then we have our auditory processing, which is how our brains pick up that information and understand it and process it.
We live in an increasingly noisy world now. How much of what goes on around us do we actually hear, and how much do we listen to?
It's really surprisingly little. On average, if you're sitting in and listening to an hour lecture, say, or an hour radio program, we're probably going to retain about 8 minutes of that 60. And if we have a well-developed strategy for picking up on auditory information, we'll increase that to about 16 or 18 minutes of information that we'll actually be able to hold on to and remember. But for the most part, it's bouncing off our eardrums and not getting picked up by our auditory processing system.
Maybe a few of our listeners might be switching off now. They think they might not retain the rest of this podcast.
Exactly. More likely, they're tuning in and out. And what happens is there's no one-size-fits-all. Each one of us has a different activation for auditory information. So some of us have a highly active system. So we have a system that's highly curious for auditory information. So we're going to be by nature tuned in to search for meaning from the information that's coming in around us. And some of us are going to be more selective, in which case we're only going to tune into it unless we recognize it as high value, high interest, or high importance to us. And otherwise, our auditory processing system isn't going to pick it up.
Do you think that that means that either the selective listener or the active listener is a better worker than the other? Does it sort of hinder how you work or how you can concentrate?
Yeah, because the selective listener, when they're focusing in on something on their computer screen, the fire alarm might go off and you have to tap them on the shoulder to point out that it's time to leave the building. Because their auditory processing system has just selected out nearly all of that information. Now, if something's of high value or high interest or high importance, they can put their full attention on it. But as soon as their auditory processing system says, this isn't useful or interesting to me anymore, they're going to be struggling to hold their attention and focus on it.
And so do maybe certain careers or certain jobs suit certain types of listeners?
Yeah, obviously the orchestra conductor favors that highly active auditory processor. We occasionally see audio engineers, musicians. I have a friend who's a car buff, and he can be standing with his back to the road and tell me the make and model of the car that just went by based on the engine sound. He's tuned to all of that. At the same time, it's often adaptive to have a selective listener, because then you don't get those energy leaks, those attention leaks or those energy leaks by having your auditory processing system get picked up.
In this show, obviously, we're going to all these different workplaces and recording what people's workplaces sound like. Now, how much can this natural sound, how much is it linked to your productivity levels?
What we do find is that almost any kind of ambient sound, if it's consistent and regular, fades into what cognitive scientists call wallpaper. So just the same way when you have fresh wallpaper in your room, the first time you walk in, it's highly stimulating, and then you habituate to it, and a year later, you don't notice, it doesn't register. And the same thing with sound. If you're in a workplace that has a consistent auditory environment, even if it can be highly active and highly stimulating, but if it's consistent, it really does drift into wallpaper pretty quickly. And then what activates you is new sound or changes in sound.
Is there an ideal working environment sound, or do you just think it differs for everyone?
We really encourage people to think that there is no one-size-fits-all, that each one of us has a different neurological response to the ambient environment. For most of us, the more consistent it is, the better off we're going to be. I grew up in the U.S. in the Muzak era, where every supermarket and every elevator and often offices had that ambient music where they tried to filter out the highs and lows. And for most of us, that's going to be just fine because it's filtering out those highs and lows. So it's not going to be as auditory interesting. It's going to function a little more at white noise. But we know there's any number of people that just drives them mad. And that's always going to be true. There's not going to be any one size fits all.
That was Francis Sopper, president of Open Book Learning. So let's go to our first workplace, an opera set makers in Victoria, British Columbia. Pacific Opera Victoria's Scene and Costume Shop is an aural environment of contrast. A heavy quiet, like the rooms are soundproofed, hangs in the air. Scissors sliced through delicate silk or a small bag of pins is rustled through when a bandsaw springs into action. Within seconds, it's almost silent again. The quiet sounds return to your ears. Darren Steinke speaks with some of the prop masters and wardrobe geniuses of this unique opera company on the west coast of Canada about their work behind the scenes.
So we've got set construction and props construction and wardrobe and scenic art. So those are the, you know, main departments here in the shop. And when we're in full swing, you know, you'll find about 12 to 15 or more people working in the shop. So it gets busy here, you know, it's a hive of activity when we're at the height of the season. We're getting ready to produce Otello here at our opera shop. We have a large facility where we build scenery, props, and costumes for all of our productions. Opera is an interesting art form in that it can be an expensive art form for a lot of companies to produce these large-scale productions. And so this company, for many years, since its inception really, has always built scenery and built props and produced everything here, you know, and used local craftspeople and to produce the shows that go on our stage. We're starting to wind up a little bit in the shop, and then we all move over to the theater, and we spend about 10 days there in production before opening night.
Thank you, Darren Steinke, for that report from Pacific Opera Victoria. Now we'll head to Beirut for a brewery with a view. The Colonel Brewery is situated right by the sea and has a bar attached to it, run by Steve Haddad, whose daily life revolves around brewing beer, serving it up to customers, and surfing. Can't be bad.
We're in the middle of Batroun, next to the sea. Here in Batroun we have a very famous spot which is called Colonel. That's what inspired the name Colonel. And this spot is very famous for surfing and windsurfing. And me and my brother Jamil, we surf. We start at 5, we first start milling the malt, so we crush them into small pieces because it's better to extract sugar from them. We start mashing, first step of brewing is mashing. Then we boil them and we start adding hops. We add hops in different quantities for each batch. For the bottles we have a filling line, which is it's manual for the time being. We have a huge green area, we have a lot of trees. We'll be right back.
After break, we'll head to a British boozer for a few local tales and an art curator's office in Lisbon to see what she chooses to stick on her stereo to inspire her. Stick around.
Do you ever feel like you've missed out on something? Have you been on the road? Miss the latest world news? Then catch up with The Recap, the best of the week's cutting-edge reports, comment, news and features from all the flagship shows on Monocle 24. Join us every Saturday from 1400 London time or via the Monocle 24 app.
You're listening to Culture with me, Robert Bound, and this week we're asking, what does work sound like? Before we pop back out to people's workplaces, we're going to revisit an interview I did a few years back for the Monocle Weekly. Julian Treasure is the chairman of the Sound Agency and has written a book called Sound Business. He specialises in making sound to accompany brands and so knows a thing or two about the psychology behind noise.
My background is magazine publishing, actually. All the way through 15 years of growing and running a magazine publishing company in the UK, I was playing music. So I had two lives going on. And when I sold my publishing business in 2001, I had the chance to look at unifying those two halves. So I wanted to bring together my understanding of brands and the way they work, because my publishing business was, it was contract publishing. We were producing beautiful customer magazines for big brands. I wanted to unify that with the sensibility to sound that, you know, every musician's got. You can't play in a band unless you can listen. It's a prerequisite. So musicians do tend to listen to the world in a slightly different way. And when I put those two things together, it became clear to me that the world sounds pretty crap.
It's a kind of catch-all term, pretty crap for how the world sounds. Do you mean sort of sound pollution and things?
Yes. Well, you know, the sound around us is not designed. Mm. It's accidental. Mm. It's kind of like the exhaust gas of the economy. And if you look around you in this room or in any room where anybody's listening to this, pretty much everything you see was designed by somebody. But that's not true of the sound. Very, very rarely are we in a designed soundscape. So over a period of time, I think probably pretty much since the Industrial Revolution, we've become very used to suppressing sound. There's so much noise around us, originally mechanical noise. I mean, once upon a time, the world was relatively quiet. You know, thunderstorms, yes, the odd war. Blacksmith's hammer, perhaps, but
don't forget horses' hooves.
Horses' hooves.
One of my favourite sound effects. Two
in
coconut
cities,
shells.
I mean, London was noisy even when there were no cars.
Because
of street callers and horses' hooves and so forth. So cities.
But it was organic sound as well, wasn't it? It was made by something that existed already.
Well, the senses were certainly challenged, but it's got worse. You know, there's no doubt that the noise of urban life and indeed the noise of life in general is getting worse year by year. Mm. Electromechanical noise now surrounds us, so we've always got fans going on or air conditioning of some kind. Very rarely in a room do we experience real silence.
I mean, it's quite nice being in here.
Yeah, this is a studio, so it's a designed environment and it's got a very low reverberation time. You know, if I go, that's very dead.
Mm.
Now, if you try that in many meeting rooms I've been in, for example, in big organizations, you'll get a 2-second reverberation time or 1.5. Try and have a good meeting in that space. It's really difficult. You want to kill somebody if two people are talking at the same time.
Yeah.
It creates your shoulders go around your ears immediately. So we've become used to suppressing sound. That's our natural reaction to it. And yet it affects us. And in the first couple of years of the Sound Agency, I was able to devise a model, of the way sound affects us. Four ways. Physiologically. So the sound around you is changing your breathing, your heart rate, even your brain waves, your hormone secretions. You know, sudden noise. If I did that louder, all the listeners would have a little shot of cortisol.
Yeah.
Fight-flight hormone. That's why you don't do things like that on the radio. So that's the first way. Second way is psychologically. We all know music changes our mood, but there are other sounds that do that too. We use a lot of birdsong in the Sound Agency.
Right.
Because people have learned over a long period of time that when the birds are singing, things are okay, generally quite safe. If something bad is about to happen, the birds suddenly stop singing. That's a very spooky moment. So birdsong is quite... Also, nature's alarm clock, it tends to make us more alert because we know, I mean, if you've ever been to an all-night party, there's that moment the birds start singing and everybody goes, oh, no.
Yeah.
So it tends to put us in this good state, which is a body-relaxed, mind-alert state. So it's a very therapeutic sound. I do recommend it to anybody. Third way sound affects us cognitively. So it's impossible to understand two people talking at the same time. So if one of you starts talking at the same time as I'm talking, you have that sometimes on radio. It's almost
I quite often
absolutely
talk over
impossible
people,
to. Yes, exactly.
So to get a handle on the sound agency itself, Julian, you advise businesses on how to almost use sound as something to make employees happier, to make themselves more productive, to have a better working environment, presumably, or any environment, I guess.
Yes, it's not just employees, actually, because we focus on the fourth way sound affects you, which is behaviourally.
Right.
Sound changes our behaviour. And so we've really become a specialist in retail soundscapes. Soundscapes that surround you with the real experience, so much more interesting than pop music, which tends to be deployed everywhere. Now, I'm a musician. I love music, and it deeply saddens me to see it being used as a veneer.
That was Julian Treasure. His book, Sound Business, is out now, published by Management Books 2000. Snappy. Next up, we're nipping to the pub. Great British boozes are a place where tales are exchanged, jokes are shared, and beer glasses are clanked together in merriment. A noisy pub means good business, so surely a landlord must find comfort in the hum of a bustling room. Bill Lutie went along to find out.
Hello, my name is FJ Waring. I'm from the Five Bells in Wickham in West Berkshire, southeast of England.
Are there any sounds in particular that spring to mind? What sounds remind you of this workplace?
Chattering of people, I would think the most, and of glasses. And especially in the kitchen, of plates being cleaned and plates being brought back and tickets being read out to the chefs and being read back. And yeah, just general sounds of the restaurant, I would say. I think in this trade, you sort of try to listen to what people say. And if they start mumbling, you always think immediately, you know, something's wrong on the table or they're not happy with something. So you sort of listen. Louder people generally, you know, you can be satisfied that they're happy. Whereas if they start speaking softly and just start speaking to each other, that's where you get a bit more worried and try to concentrate more on that area. You always think it might be that they're unsatisfied with the waiter or with the food or with their surroundings, really. So you always, like I say, if they sound happy, you know they're happy and you're happy.
1325. Thank you.
Get your locals from the village itself. You have your regulars that come from far and they all know each other, which is the great thing about it.
And what about the stories you hear? Do they tell you things that maybe they shouldn't tell you or that you wish you didn't hear?
Yeah, always a barman is the person to chat to, as they always say. So you hear all the different stories about what they say about each other and about their family. And the good thing is you can always hear both sides because they know each other so very well over here. Sometimes they have a few drinks and they say things to each other. Next day, the one pair will come in, tell you exactly what happened. The other day, the other pair will come in and tell you exactly what happened, so you can sort of make up your own, you know, what actually happened in the evening. There's one guy who likes to be on his own, but he will always start talking to someone, and then he regrets it in the end, which is a bit silly of him. And then as soon as these people leave, he will say to you, well, they do this and that, and they do it this way, I want to do it this way and that way. And then in the next day, the people will come in and they will say, well, he got quite rude with me yesterday. Did I do something wrong? And you just have to explain to him, no, that's just the type of guy that he is, really.
We're going to end in Lisbon to find out what one curator chooses to listen to. Margarida Mendes has been running the project space The Barbershop for 6 years. As well as her events-based programme of lectures, screenings and workshops, she's also constantly on the road, working with this year's Baltic Triennale and next year, public programmes curator at the Gwangju Biennial in South Korea. She invites Saima Tarek to her plant and record-filled workspace in Barro Alto to listen to some inspirational tracks.
So this is a cassette that I got on my travel to São Tomé Islands in Equatorial Africa. And I was doing a residency there recording the legacy of oral tradition, which is the most genuine form of culture, I believe. And I was in contact with a lot of storytellers and poets and musicians. And I got this cassette on the back shop of a back shop of music. And it's by Sangazusa, a local band that have been playing for more than 40 years. It has an amazing work. Let's listen. I'm a curator and programmer based in Lisbon. I have been working at an artist-run space that I run since 6 years, called The Barbershop. And I've been developing a program of lectures, performances, screenings, event-based. And from next month on, I'm going to be working on a project in South Korea, in Gwangju, with Maria Lind from Sweden. And I'm going to be developing the public program for the next Gwangju Biennial, mostly focused on mediation, on the future of art, what art can do as an educational tool. I work from home. I have a big office with a long balcony and a collection of plants and books, and also of music from my travels. I have been a bit all over Europe, but also in Asia and in the States. And I've collected many cassettes and many records along those travels. And they inspire me a lot during my main activity, which is research and also writing. I spend most of my days reading and then writing, sometimes fiction, sometimes essays. So Maman Sanli is an artist that I really like, and he plays organ since at least 1974. He's based in Niger, and he just had an amazing concert in Associação Zé dos Bois, ZDB, a local venue for music and arts. I think for me, he plays like wedding music, but down-tempo wedding music, but it's truly inspiring, very emotive, and a very beautiful ambient atmospheric condition that it brings to us. But it could also be like church music in a way, but it's a different kind of spirituality. I normally listen to a lot of electronic music pioneers, like Steve Reich as well, because I find that serialism is really comforting. One is trying to deconstruct the concepts and scenarios we have to work with. So I mostly focus on minimalism and different kinds of compositions, non-song format based. And those help me a lot to think. Music becomes like an abstract terrain for thought and for freeing my mind from the reality I already know, so I can try to think of future audiences and new concepts for my curatorial practice.
Thanks to Saima Tarek for that report from Lisbon. It seems there is no one workplace that fits all. You might close yourself off from the familiar world with headphones filled with classical music, ambient electro, maybe even thrash metal, whatever floats your boat. The natural ambiance of the room might be exactly what you need for optimum productivity, or perhaps the gentle murmur of a dulled radio or faded chat in the background is the wallpaper of your working day. Maybe it's time you invested in an album of tweeting birds and waves crashing on the beach so you can concentrate on that looming deadline. Just make sure there's at least one active listener in the room at any one time in case the fire alarm goes off. And that brings us to the end of this week's listening expedition. We hope you've taken in more than 6 minutes of the last half an hour. Let us know and we'll tell Francis Sopper to have another look at his research. You've been listening to Culture on Monocle 24. My producer was Holly the Boss Fisher. Join me again at the same time next week, but for the time being, I've been Robert Bounds, and thank you very much for tuning in.